Hello and welcome to the Total Football Soccer Show, Richmond's first, only, and therefore best soccer talk show. I'm Daryl.
And I'm Taylor, and this week on the show,
we'll look back at the Confederations Cup. Did soccer finally arrive in America, or did it just visit for the summer?
American defender Oguchi Onyewu signs for Italian club AC Milan, leaving many to wonder just how good Gooch will look in Gucci.
US and Mexico renew their rivalry next week. Can a group of Americans return from south of the border with something other than a hangover?
We'll talk with Richmond Kickers head coach Lee Kalishaw about the state of soccer in America and how it feels to officially be better than baseball and hockey.
Taylor and myself will list our top five most successful Americans abroad, none of whom will be Landon Donovan.
And we'll close the show with our inaugural soccer-specific spelling bee. Before we begin, I feel like it might be necessary to clarify why we decided to call it the Total Football Soccer Show.
Yeah, originally we were thinking the Total Football Show in reference to the Dutch system of football. But we thought maybe we'd get some angry NFL fans tuning in.
Yeah, and they're kind of big guys usually. So then we thought about Total Soccer. But for me, soccer conjures up images of, you know, six-year-olds running around on fields, not really knowing what they're doing, waiting for their orange slices and their moms to pick them up in the minivan.
See, I've got no objection to the word soccer because it's just an abbreviation of the original term association football. So soccer's okay by me.
Likewise, I've got no problem with the term football. So we decided to call it the Total Football Soccer Show. It might be a mouthful, but at least it makes sense.
This summer, the US men's national team did much better than expected at the 2009 Confederations Cup in South Africa, making it all the way to the final and coming oh so close to beating Brazil, but not quite. It's the most impressive thing the US have done since the 2002 World Cup. I think that's fair to say, Taylor.
I definitely agree.
Okay, so what does this mean for US soccer? How big of an achievement is it?
All right, here's how I'm going to try to rationalize this as an American supporter. Obviously, when they were up 2-0 at the end of the first half, and I was ecstatic. Brazil ended up coming back in the second half, winning 3-2. And at first, I was devastated. You know, I watched them getting their trophy. I wasn't too thrilled. But the more I think about it, the more I think that losing in the final may be the best thing that the Americans could have done.
Okay, can you explain how that makes sense?
Yeah. If you go back to the 2002 World Cup, when the United States, some would say, overachieved.
Made the quarterfinals, right?
Yeah, we made the quarterfinals. And so for the next World Cup in 2006, everyone expected us to be this, you know, the world beaters, this great team, and we got spanked.
Okay.
And so...
So we're talking over expectation.
Exactly. And so, you know, you saw the way this match was covered, and, you know, it was on ESPN, they showed the highlights, they had people discussing it, people on the streets were discussing it. I can't think of a U.S. match that's ever happened like that before. So I think that if that had happened going to next year's World Cup, people would have expected us, you know, to really compete and maybe win the whole thing.
And to get to the final again.
Exactly. Yeah. And so now, you know, we've lost the final, so our players know what it's like, but we don't have that arrogance about us going in. And I think it makes us a much stronger team on the whole.
It's a good point. And I think the other big positive, if not winning it is a positive, the other big positive is the sort of profile that it gave the USA team and soccer in general in this country over the summer.
I even heard Jim Rome talk about it.
I did. He was almost complimentary.
Almost. This is about as nice as you can be when it comes to our sport.
But for me, the thing that I noticed was people who normally don't care about soccer were asking me, so what's the Confederations Cup? What's it all about? What's, you know what I mean? People were interested.
What is the Confederations Cup, by the way?
Well, for anyone listening who doesn't know, it's basically a test run for the World Cup, which is obviously in South Africa in 2010.
All right. So how did you feel this went for the United States, specifically their head coach, Bob Bradley?
I think it's huge for Bob Bradley because the other big story, apart from the US making the final, is the fact that after the first two games, they were basically done.
Yeah.
It was a miracle that after those first two games that it turned around and they got out of the group stage, then beat Spain, the number one team in the world, they were then.
Yeah.
In the semi-final, and then came so close to beating Brazil. But after the first two games, Bob Bradley, there were calls for him to lose his job.
Yeah.
And there's a recession on.
What does that have to do with
Because then
anything?
He wouldn't have a job.
Oh, my God. I did not know that you were so concerned about the livelihood of Bob Bradley.
I'm concerned about the unemployment numbers. We don't want an extra one on the, you don't want to add an extra one to the figures.
All right.
So yeah, there were calls for him to lose his job. But then he switched from what I'd call a cowardly 4-5-1, which is the formation he played when we lost to Italy and when we lost to Brazil in the group stage. He switched to a 4-4-2 with Jozy Altidore and Charlie Davies up front, and I think it changed everything. It was what American soccer should be. It was aggressive. It was attacking. They went for Egypt.
I'd say counter-attacking.
Yeah. Not against Egypt. Against Egypt, they went for it.
Yeah, I'll give you that, yeah.
Against Spain, it was counter-attacking because there's no other way to play against Spain. But, I mean, it was successful. So the other big thing is that as well as catching the attention of people here in America, I think it gained a lot of respect for the US team and American soccer in general around the world. I'm sure Spanish people think differently when they think of American soccer now.
Yeah, now hopefully they hate Landon Donovan as much as I do.
Oh, why do you have to say that? Landon Donovan was the best American player at the Confederations Cup. He's the most talented American player there is right now. So I don't understand why you'd be so against him.
Two things.
Okay.
First of all, not true about him being the best player, because you're forgetting Timmy Howard, who single-handedly kept us even close to winning that final against Brazil. The reason why I don't like Landon Donovan
best
is because...
Best outfield player.
Okay. Maybe. But I think the reason why I don't like Landon Donovan is because he seems to occasionally value himself more than he does his club, the LA Galaxy, and sometimes the national team. You know, you look at the way he celebrated the second goal against Brazil. Some would disagree. I swear he pointed at himself and said, me, me, me. You know, watch the replay for yourself. But
in Landon Donovan's defense, I'd say that until you score against Brazil in a cup final, then you don't know how to react. I think I might point at myself if I scored against Brazil.
Fair enough. So then what are the ramifications for Donovan and Donovan's career?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, we know the big thing with Donovan is that he wants to move to Europe and he's tried three times and it hasn't quite happened for him.
So if it hasn't happened for him, but it's happened for other American players, how can you say he's the best American player?
He's the best on the American national team. And I think
my question still stands.
Okay. In the Confederations Cup and in general, he is the US playmaker. He's the number 10. He's the go-to guy. He makes things happen. The US team without Landon Donovan would be half as effective. But looking back at the Confederations Cup, I think we can both agree on who the worst player was.
Without a doubt, that's DeMarcus Beasley.
Yeah.
You may argue the switching from a 4-5-1 to a different formation was the key. I'd say that pulling DeMarcus Beasley out of that lineup was the key for the United States winning.
Yeah, I think that's possible.
Yeah.
To be honest, I feel sorry for the guy a little bit because he's just completely out of form, and maybe he shouldn't have been in the team and exposed to that kind of competition and ultimately that kind of ridicule like he just got here on the radio.
So the one player who really did bolster his reputation at the Confederations Cup would be Oguchi Onyewu.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. The big defender was playing in Belgium, but after his Confederations Cup performances, he was signed by none other than AC Milan.
Yeah, that's a pretty big move considering that prior to that, he was linked with Turkish club Fenerbahce, who are a big club, but not quite as big as AC Milan.
This is basically one of or the biggest move for an American footballer.
Yeah, and I don't know about you. At first, I was pretty excited about this. Now I'm a little more skeptical.
So why are you skeptical?
Well, you look at Onyewu, who his style is kind of built around, size and strength.
Okay.
And I'm not sure that suits AC Milan and Serie A as a whole, I'd say.
Okay, but isn't defending just defending? Like, if he can defend in Belgium, why can't he defend in Italy?
But in Italy, they're a little more technical. The defense, the midfield, the attack, they're all pretty skilled on the ball. And I don't know if Onyewu has that level of ability.
Yeah. I would say that we don't know because we haven't really seen... He hasn't had the opportunity to do that, especially not for the US team.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting to find out, basically. I know I'll pay a lot more attention to AC Milan games this year than I did last season.
Well, I think the one question that we've actually overlooked to begin with is how much of the pitch does he actually see in this move?
Well, I guess if he's sitting on the bench, he can see the whole pitch.
I think that doesn't quite answer the question, though.
Yeah, I know what you're saying there. So AC Milan have got Alessandro Nesta, who's been very injury-prone the last year or two. They've got Kaladze, who's also injury prone. He's got problems with his knees. Mm-hmm. So he'll definitely see some time. Basically, there's no guarantee of minutes. He's not going to start every game, but he'll get a chance to impress, and he'll get a chance to stake his claim for a first team place.
Yeah, but see, the thing about that is that he's not going to have a lot of time to impress. AC Milan haven't exactly done the best job in their transfers this season. Sure, they brought on Yewu. They got rid of Kaká, who's arguably their most important player.
They had fans rioting exactly. A couple of days before. And they signed on Yewu the next day, so there's almost an element that he's a sort of a panic signing.
Yeah, a little bit. And I think when you think of rioting fans, they're not usually quelled by a giant defender. Isn't usually what gets the job done. So yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on him in the Serie A, and I'm personally hoping he does well, but, you know, I'm not holding my breath.
Okay. You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Daryl
and Taylor
on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3, radio for the rest of us. So the Confederations Cup went well for the United States. The Gold Cup, not so much.
Yeah, not so much at all. Basically, after the Confederations Cup, we sent our B, C,
D minus,
U, whatever you want to say, team to compete in this tournament, which is, you know, a relatively minor tournament in my opinion. So this B, C, U team did okay up to the final, where they pretty well got waxed by Mexico. It was 5-0 final. Some would say it's not that big of a deal. I'm one of them because it was, you know, our B and C team.
Well, I'd say it's a big deal because Mexico hadn't beaten the US on US soil for over a decade. It was 99 was the last time. And that was a huge psychological barrier for the Mexican team when they came here. And now that's gone. Now they think they can come here, they can beat us. They know they can beat the US.
Yeah, actually, I would agree with you on that one, because if you watched when Mexico was awarded their first goal via penalty, the players even celebrated getting the penalty as much as a normal team would celebrate getting a goal. So you can tell it really mattered to them that they were going to play well and beat the USA.
And the flip side of that equation is that on August the 12th, the US travels to Azteca Stadium in Mexico for a World Cup qualifier, mm-hmm. a place where they've never, ever won.
Yeah, and they better this time.
Well, as a semi-US fan, I'd be perfectly happy with a draw.
But the thing for me is that we always tend to go back and forth with this Mexico team. We'll beat them at home, we'll lose to them away. And I don't think that if we're supposed to be, you know, a better team than we were at the beginning of the Confederations Cup, that tradition continues. That at some point we have to show that we're the dominant team in North America. That we can beat Mexico home and away.
Okay, well maybe we could start by beating them at home and not losing 5-0.
Yeah, I suppose so. But, you know, hopefully we can travel to the Azteca, we can break that curse and, you know, move on from there.
So if the USA goes to the Azteca and wins for the first time, then I think the Gold Cup loss will be forgotten.
Maybe not forgotten, but I'll certainly feel a whole lot better about it.
So if you want to see that game, it's Wednesday, August the 12th, 4 o'clock Eastern kickoff. Make sure to tell your boss in advance and finish work early that day. There's more to soccer in America than just the national team. There's also your local USL Division II club, the Richmond Kickers. We sat down with their head coach, Lee Cowlishaw, to discuss his expectations for the team and for soccer in America.
So the Renegades are taking a year off. Braves are in Georgia now. How does it feel to be the only professional sports franchise left in Richmond?
It really hasn't changed. Overall, we're very happy where we are, you know, with a professional sports franchise. I would say that we're a little bit different to your regular professional franchise because we're more of a family market, mm-hmm. And really focused on community and grassroots, so it's a little bit different, but you know, we're happy so far, and we continue to see small increases in attendance. So have you guys
been growing pretty consistently with attendance?
Yeah, it's you're looking at maybe 5%, you're looking at maybe 50-100 a year, but you know, we're getting between 2,000 or 3,000 a game now, mm-hmm. And in the past we were probably getting initially 700 to maybe just over 1,000.
And are you satisfied with that growth? Or?
No, I mean, we'd love to have 4,000 or 5,000 a game. And if we had 4,000 or 5,000 a game, I think you'd see us back in USL 1.
Mm-hmm. Now, going off that, when did you actually come to Richmond?
Came to Richmond in 1990, July 1990, to go to the University of Richmond.
And then you graduated from there and went to the
graduated
Kickers?
Graduated in 94. The Kickers started in 93 as kind of an amateur league the first year. Played a massive 12-game season, 6 home games, and then from there started working for them kind of full-time right after I graduated. Mm-hmm.
So you've been with the organization pretty much since the beginning. Have you seen, I guess, the perception of soccer in America change in that time?
Massive. Yeah. The first season, the biggest cheers would come from Richmond kickers getting a corner, or the Richmond kickers getting a yellow or a red card. Those would be the biggest cheers, and that's not exaggerating one bit. In the early days, soccer, when I came over here, I was very shocked at how soccer was perceived. And, you know, a lot of people would say, hey, it's a girl's sport. And, you know, coming from Europe, it was just laughable. It is a girl's sport, but not in that way. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, then, I guess that's my question then, is going forward, if you've already seen that growth, where do you hope for the lead to continue for the
kids? Well, I mean, go back to 93, you'd go to a soccer camp and you'd ask one of the players, you know, who's your favorite player? And you'd get blank looks. Today, you know, nearly every kid will have some kind of jersey on, be it MLS, be it a European jersey, be it South American jersey, you know, whatever. They'll be very knowledgeable. They get to watch professional soccer on TV all the time. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen till 96, 97. Mm-hmm. When a lot of my family come over here now, they're amazed that there's 2 full-time soccer channels. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't even get that in England. So previous, when you said soccer, it was just kids running around and having fun, signed up by the parents. Today, there are many, many players looking to play professionally and playing real soccer, what I would say.
So, and you travel a fair amount. One thing I've always wondered is, does that really play as much of a part as people say it does, to have those away games and, you know, you're staying in hotels, you're eating different food? Is that really that big of an issue? Well,
probably what you need to do is you need to come with us, maybe not to Bermuda, but maybe you should have come last week when we took a 13-hour bus trip up to Western Mass.
Yeah,
get there about 9-10 o'clock, stay in the hotel, and then try and play a game the next night in unfamiliar circumstances. It's difficult, you know, being out of your normal routine. And it does affect performance. Mm-hmm.
How are the crowds on the road?
In USL 2, I would say typically you're looking at, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 fans on a good day. Definitely different to USL 1 from my experience. Portland and Montreal, mm-hmm, and Vancouver and Seattle, and those are the reasons why MLS is recruited and still recruiting those markets.
Do you ever see the kickers making that jump?
Yeah, I would love it to happen. You'll need a multi-billionaire owner who's happy to spend his money on soccer, and you're going to need 15,000 to 20,000 fans. And at the moment, you know, mm-hmm, Richmond doesn't have that for any sport.
Yeah. And so what can our listeners do to get involved, to support the squad? I mean, I assume coming out would be a big part.
Yeah, that's the number one thing. Come out to a game, you know, and support the team. The level of play is very, very good. I think we can deal and compete against most of the MLS teams, and we've done that in the past, and we've knocked out several. There's a reason for that, and it's because we've got a talented group of individuals, and the organization always tries to put the best team on the field we can.
But Lee, thanks a lot for
no
doing
problem.
It.
And, yeah, first I appreciate it, and good luck with the show.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Taylor
and Daryl
here on WRIR 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
Okay, so in honor of Aguchi Onye, who's moved to AC Milan, Taylor and myself are going to do one of our top fives. And this week we're going to do the top 5 most successful Americans in Europe.
All right, well, my number 5 is Claudio Reyna.
Captain America.
Captain America. I remember him less than fondly for his poor performance in the 2006 World Cup.
Yep.
But before that, he logged close to 250 appearances in Europe. But most importantly, he was the first American to ever captain a foreign team. That'd be the German club VfL Wolfsburg. So that's pretty big.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so my number 5 is John Harkes, who most people probably know as the guy on ESPN right now. But watching football in England growing up, he was the first American I ever saw playing football. He's the man that made me realise that Americans actually could play soccer when I saw him play for Sheffield Wednesday in the early 90s.
Sort of in a similar vein, my number 4 is Jay DeMeritt. A lot of people may not be familiar with Jay DeMeritt. He is currently playing for the U.S. national team, and he currently plays for Watford. But before that, He was playing for seventh-tier side Northwood. He came over from the United States just, you know, on a whim and ended up getting a trial and getting signed by Watford, and he's now their captain. So anyone who can captain a squad in the EPL is pretty big.
Yeah, to start from non-league and rise that high is what you call a fairy tale story, and to do it as an American, going to England and starting from the bottom and working your way to the top.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
My number four is also Claudio Reyna, who we've already discussed. So I can throw it back to you, Taylor.
All right. My number three is a man that Daryl and I will probably disagree on. That'd be Oguchi Onyewu, formerly of Standard Liège. You want to say. Liège, there you go. Daryl's European, so it makes more sense. In the Belgian League. While playing there, he won the Belgian League twice, and he was the best foreign player of the year in 2005.
So. Okay, so here's my problem. Is I'm a big fan of Gooch. He's one of my favorite American players. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe I could play in the Belgian league.
I think the thousands of angry Belgian listeners that we have are pretty upset by that claim.
Yeah, they're going to come and shout at me in Flemish, I can imagine.
Honestly, I'm actually not that big of a fan of Onyewu, but, you know, he's won two league titles and he's been best foreign player of the year. I don't think a lot of other players have.
All right, well, when he makes a success of himself in Milan, which I hope he does, then he makes my list, but not this time.
I'm going to go with if over when, but anyway.
Okay, so my number three is Brian McBride.
Oh, he's still my number one.
Really? Okay.
Thief.
What can we say about Brian McBride?
He's more machine than he is man.
That's true. That's true. But I think that's testament to the sort of player he is. Yeah. He's the big centre forward who's taken so many elbows to the face that he's had to have reconstruct. I mean, yeah, literally it's plastic in his face, right?
Plastic and metal, I think.
Plastic and metal, yeah. Okay. So he went to England and basically was the classic English centre forward, except he was American, and I think he impressed a lot of people in England playing for Fulham and for Everton.
All right, so my number two, since Daryl's stolen my number one, is Timmy Howard. Hey. He's the current American goalkeeper. I would say one of the top five goalkeepers in the world.
I'm not sure, but I like him a lot.
That's because Daryl thinks David James of England is, and that's why he's a fool. Tim Howard was signed by Manchester United, making him probably the other big name transfer in American history. Unfortunately, it didn't quite work out for him.
He was goalkeeper of the year one season, and then he made a mistake. And if you make a mistake playing in goal for Manchester United, Fergie sends you somewhere else.
Unless your name's Fabian Barthez and you can make like 50. But anyway, he failed to impress with United. He was loaned to Everton and eventually sold there, where he's actually since then become one of the best goalkeepers in the English Premier League. I think that's something that you can't really argue.
Definitely.
Maybe in the world is something that you could.
My number two might be controversial, but I'm going to stick up for him. It's DeMarcus Beasley.
Oh, okay.
So DeMarcus Beasley right now
is this serious?
This is serious.
Oh, I thought this was a joke. Okay.
DeMarcus Beasley right now is a laughingstock because he was horrendous in the Confederations Cup. He let that ball run under his foot Brazilian scored. And then
Most of the best American players know how to trap a ball. That's not something that a 12-year-old should do.
So DeMarcus Beasley right now is not one of the most successful American players in Europe. But DeMarcus Beasley back in 2004, 2005, he went to PSV in Holland and he went to the Champions League semi-final, only American so far to play in a semi-final. And for that reason, he's my number two.
So for that, I guess you could respect him, but for not much else. My number one has already been stated. It's Brian McBride. He's a machine and I love him for that.
And my number one most successful player is Tim Howard.
Ah, there you go.
Because I feel like he did do well at Manchester United, but Ferguson is just a harsh manager. And a lot of players get cut by Manchester United, and that's sort of the end of them. Remember the goalkeeper Taibbi, the Italian guy? He made an error. He was sent. We never heard from him again. But Tim Howard went to Everton, rebuilt his career, and now he's in a position where, with Edwin van der Sar retiring, maybe Manchester United wish they had him now.
Yeah, that seems a definite possibility. So there's our top five for this week. Although, Daryl, I gotta admit, I was a little disappointed that neither one of us had Clint Dempsey on our list.
Well, I guess we both thought he's only been at Fulham 2.5 years. And I mean, he's done well, but he hasn't been necessarily a regular starter.
Yes, but you can't forget about his secondary career as a rapper. If you don't believe me, go to YouTube and check out Don't Tread on This.
Maybe if we do a future top five rap songs by American soccer players, then Clint Dempsey will figure in there. But in the meantime, if you've got your own top five most successful Americans abroad, send them to us at soccer@wrir.org.
each week, Daryl and I will be having a spelling bee to determine who knows more about our beautiful game for that given week. Daryl, you want to start us off?
Okay, so the U.S. national team player I'd like you to spell for me is Santino Quaranta.
All right. I think I can do this one. S-A-N-T-I-N-O.
Yep.
Q-U-A-R-A-N-T-A.
Yes.
Yes! Yes!
All right, well done.
All right. One for one this week. Let's see if Daryl can keep up. I would like you to spell the player who's number six all-time in career appearances, Paul Caligiuri. Paul Caligiuri for the tie.
P-A-U-L.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough one.
Caligiuri. C-A-L-I-G. This is where it gets tricky. I.
Mm-hmm.
U-R-I.
That is correct.
Oh.
Well done. Well done.
Arms in the air.
Arms in the air.
Arms raised in triumph.
Taylor's disappointed. Arms raised in triumph. It's one of the few times Daryl's ever been able to do that in his entire life.
Okay, so after the first spelling bee, it's one all, one each, mm-hmm. one for one, however you want to say it.
Yeah, however you want to say it, I'm not pleased.
And we'll continue this next week.
We will indeed.
So that about wraps it up for us here on the Total Football Soccer Show. We'll be back next week, same time, same place, Thursdays, 12:30 p.m. on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3.
And until then, in the immortal words of Clint Dempsey, real recognize real, don't tread on this.